ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text 33. Yasyaya daiva vihitam
Yasyaya daiva vihitam
Satena sukha dukha yoho Atmanam Toshayan dehi Tamasak param richati Yasya yadaiva vihitam Satena sukha dukkayoho Atmanam Toshayan dehi Tamasak param richati. Yasya. Anyone. Yat. That which. Daiva. By destiny. Vihitam. Destined. Saha. Such a person, tena, by that, sukha-dukha-yoho, happiness or distress, atmanam, one's self, toshayan, being satisfied, dehi, an embodied soul, Tamasaha of the darkness, param to the other side, Richati crosses. Translation: one should try to keep himself satisfied in any condition of life, whether distress or happiness, which is offered by the Supreme Will. A person who endures in this way is able to cross over the darkness of nescience very easily. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Material existence consists of pious and impious fruitive activities. As long as one is engaged in any type, any kind of activity other than devotional service, it will result in happiness and distress in the material world. When we enjoy life in so-called material happiness, it is understood that we are diminishing the resultant actions of our pious activities. And when we are put into suffering, it is to be understood that we are diminishing the resultant actions of our impious activities. Instead of being attached to the circumstantial happiness and distress resulting from pious and impious activities, if we want to get out of the clutches of this nescience, then whatever position we are put in, by the will of the Lord, we should accept. Thus, if we simply surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can get out of the clutches of this material existence. Well, that's good news. And then comes the reality of day-to-day life when we're seeking the happiness and being really troubled by the distress and trying to figure our way out of the distress, and it's not happening and we become more distressed and carry on in material life. The scene is Narada is imparting transcendental knowledge. To Dhruva, and the apparent purpose of that transcendental knowledge is to help this nice little boy get over feeling so distressed. Because when you take shelter of the boat of transcendental knowledge, you can easily cross over the ocean of material existence. So it has a long-term benefit as well as a short-term benefit. And Dhruva has been told by his mother that to get what you want, it's only possible that God gives you that. Lord Vishnu can do anything. So, logically, Dhruva says, okay, how do I find Vishnu? His mother says, I don't know. I'm just a woman. I don't know these things so much, but I've heard the sages, they go to the forest, and in the forest, somehow they find Lord Vishnu. So considering that, he says, okay, see you later, Mom, I'm heading for the forest. And off he goes to the forest looking for Lord Vishnu. So his motivation is, find Lord Vishnu. But he can't find Lord Vishnu. All he can find is squirrels and trees and flowers and birds and snakes and, you know, things of the forest. He doesn't find Lord Vishnu. But then Narada comes, knowing that this event has happened, to try to assist. So the previous verse, his assistance is to tell Narada, go back home. Excuse me, Dhruva, go back home. It's very difficult. Why, even great sages and highly elevated personalities, they're attempting to do what you're attempting to do, and it takes lifetimes, and still they don't succeed. You're just a small boy. Head on the head, just go back home. It doesn't show Dhruva sitting there shaking his head saying, oh, I'm going back home. So now he's trying to elevate him out of the motivation that's causing him to seek Lord Vishnu, that is anger or intolerant. The position of a kshatriya is that he has his kshatriya spirit. Read the verse, he has this prestige. And without maintaining his honor and prestige, he's not a kshatriya. Kshatriyas die. They give up their life to preserve and defend and further their honor. So he's a kshatriya. That's the spirit. Now Narada is giving transcendental knowledge, saying, you want Lord Vishnu, you have to let go of this kshatriya spirit thing. You have to come to the transcendental platform. because that's where Lord Vishnu was on. He's on the transcendental platform. He's not available down here. So, on that transcendental platform, there's a quality that you need to develop to get to that transcendental platform. And you need this quality of tolerance. And the quality of tolerance, there's the feature of duality, and you look at the feature of duality, and you're not moved by it. Matras parshas tukonteya satoshna sukha dukada agama ayonityas tongues titiksha sva bharata. One should be tolerant. And that means I'm not looking for happiness. I'm not trying to avoid unhappiness determined by external things. The configuration of duality now reads good fortune, ill fortune, happiness, distress, cold, warm, light, dark, up, down, happy, sad, honor, dishonor, etc. The world of duality is not important to me. I may deal with it, but it's not what holds real importance to me. So if you say no to that, you have to say yes to something else. To be an ascetic that just says no, where does that leave you? Well, impersonalism or voidism, nirvishesha or shunyavadi. Okay, so that's not Narada's advice. Prabhupada isn't obviously taking us there in the purport. But if someone doesn't have shelter in Vishnu or Krishna or devotional service, something that's eternal and not temporary, if you don't have that, what's the fuel, what's the propellant behind tolerating circumstances? Prabhupada describes that in Bhagavad Gita. It's frustration. Vita raga bhaya krodha. Krodha, or anger, born of the impersonalism and voidism, is born of frustration with material life. Seeking for happiness, and all I get is distress. Seeking for happiness, and all I get is distress. I want to minimize distress, so when I work on minimizing distress, I get more distress. I'm frustrated, it's not working. Born of frustration, one seeks impersonalism. Make it zero. It's not real. It's God's energy, so it has its reality. But how do you deal with that? So, it's a beginning position, it's a beginning instruction in Bhagavad Gita to tolerate or remain indifferent to. The idea is then to seek in that quiet space to seek a higher reality. I'll just go back to our japa retreat and share a little bit. This idea of one mantra at a time, that a mechanical explanation behind it is it makes the mind quiet. Or the mind wants to tolerate the mind wants to wander. You neglect the mind. It's to quiet the mind functionally. So in that quiet space, then you can reflect on something higher than the demands of the mind. That's That's nice, refreshing. Something higher than the mind. Because we're used to living within the mind. And you slow it down and quiet it down, and you can reflect on that which is higher than the mind. It's a Buddhist principle also. There are disciplines whereby that is attempted. And the goal is to reach the stage where you're there. And what's there? A state of nothingness. You're there. But to be there means you're nowhere. State of nothingness. Void. Nirvana. Or it's Buddhistic, but it's just, you know, with a different label. Somebody was sharing this with me, and they showed me the book. Something like The Power of Now. Anyone familiar with that? You familiar with that?
I know the book.
You know the book?
Yeah,
somebody showed you the book. Well, I saw a devotee that had that on his bookshelf, too. I don't think he was, like, you know, getting into it. But he wanted to understand what it was because it's popular. So The Power of Now. Or when I was in college, it was Be Here Now. Ram Dass. Be Here Now. Wow, that sounds mystical. Be Here Now. So, you know, be in the moment. Same thing as, you know, you can't chant the mantra before or after. You can only chant the one you're chanting now. It's just applying it to, it's the principle of being present with Krishna. So in one sense, it's mechanical. Higher than tolerating the mind is being so absorbed. Because you go up the ladder and there's some taste, there's attraction, there's attachment. You're disaffected because you're so much absorbed. I'm sure we all have the experience when you're really absorbed in something. You're not noticing peripheral things, like what somebody's making some noise and something's moving and something. When you're really absorbed, that peripheral awareness diminishes because you're so focused. What to speak of devotion? The principle of devotion is then introduced in the purport. So far, Narada has not presented that, but that's where transcendental knowledge takes you. Just like King Chitraketu in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, when King Chitraketu had everything, almost everything. Everything in his kingdom that any person could want, there was one thing missing, and that was causing him great grief. He had no son. So he was very unhappy, although everything was otherwise perfect, materially speaking. But Angira Muni visited the king's palace, and Angira was received, because he was a very pious king. He was received very nicely, very respectfully, very suitably for a royal king. Angira was very pleased, but he could clearly understand the king is not happy. So he asked him, "My dear king, are your citizens unruly? Is your treasury not replete? Are your armies not strong in defending your kingdom, and you know, gave the long list of things that are all, but as far as I can see, all these things are in place in your kingdom. So please tell me, what is it that is causing you any disturbance, unhappiness? And the king said, you're a great sage, I know that you already know. But you're just asking. So I'll tell you.
I want a son. I don't have a son. It's my duty. I'm the king. I'm supposed to have a son so I can have, he can be the next king. Please, you're a great sage. You can do something. Help me have a son.
Angira didn't instruct transcendental knowledge because he was too attached. So he made an arrangement so he could become unattached. He gave him an arrangement to have a son that would be taken away. Then he would be, you know, ready to hear transcendental. So they came back and he again imparted transcendental knowledge. Angira was so, Chitraketu was so distressed, he didn't even recognize Angira. What to speak of Angira's friend, who was carrying a veena, and was Narada Muni. So after imparting transcendental knowledge, when Angira was able to hear, then he asked, who are you? So he said, I'm the same person who made arrangement that you could have your son. I'm Angira, and I brought my friend with me, Narada, so he can impart devotional service knowledge to you. So this is the preliminary. Transcendental knowledge is the preliminary. There are stages of spiritual realization that start with rising above the circumstance, the temporary circumstances of material existence. Rishabhdev, in his teachings in the fifth canto, is really clear. There's no question of even beginning on the spiritual path if one is not capable of austerity. I'll say it again. One can't even begin to move on the spiritual path if one is not prepared to accept austerity. So austerity doesn't mean like, okay, I'm ready to do something that hurts. What is it? Prabhupada discussing this says, the materialists, they also do things that hurt. You know, the businessman that rises before the birds rise and he's zooming to work and, you know, he's get that money. He's doing austerities, etc. The different types of people that do austerity. So not that, but that would tapo divyam, that which gives rise to transcendental life and the willingness, whatever it may seem to be as an inconvenience, I'm willing to do that. That's austerity. Those that look at our lifestyle, I mean, you know, we've all had the experience to tell people what time you get up when you do it in your classes to the college kids. You know, we start our day, we rise at 4 a.m. They go, ooh, 4 a.m. Yes? What's wrong with you people? Ooh, that hurts. But for us, it's nice. It's nice. Earlier is nicer. Earlier than that is nicer too. It's nice. Ooh. It's nice. Etc. It looks like austerity, but it releases one from the attachment to seeking happiness on the temporary plane. So Narada's words are, by keeping yourself satisfied in all conditions of life, that's daiva vihitam satena sukha dukha yoho. Whatever arrangements come your way by God's arrangements, you accept them. Some of you may have participated in the retreat that we had in Gitanagari, where everyone that attended Krishna Leela Seminar got this "say yes to Krishna" button. It's the same idea. This is now going to a higher, that it's God's arrangement, not just I realize that this is the cause of suffering, so let me detach myself from the cause of suffering. That's the beginning. Be indifferent or tolerant to, be willing to accept austerities in regards to the circumstances of life, because you can't change them anyway. Just accept them and tolerate them. Now go a little higher. It's God's arrangement. So I accept it because it's God's arrangement. You know, then people get stuck in, well, how can this be God's arrangement, and how can it should be that? Instead it's this. You know, why do bad things happen to good people? I'm a good person, or so-and-so is such a good person. And why does such a bad thing happen to them? And then they go the other direction. How come all these bad people, they have good things happen to them? It's not fair. There's injustice in the universe. Inequity. It's not fair. And people lose their faith in God as a result. I've met people who have had that happen. Prabhupada describes his godbrother, who was a German gentleman, became a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta, and this German gentleman, professor, described to Prabhupada that during World War II, the sons and the fathers and the brothers of different women in Germany, they went off to war and they were praying to God, please send my son, my father, my brother back from the war. And when they didn't come back from the war, people became atheists. So, to accept things that come our way as given by God, that's a step above transcendental knowledge. It's making a God connection. Well, within a certain frame, that's not so difficult to do. But when it goes outside the borders of that frame, that's when it starts to get a little challenging. More than a little challenging. No, instead of yes. At least the mind, if not everything else about our life. And we busy ourselves in making arrangements for making the circumstance different. Not out of service, but out of sense gratification. And that's the difference between, that's how the purport begins. Material existence consists of pious and impious fruitive activities. So the whole program, maybe we think of fruitive activities as, you know, people that go to the office and do their work. And that's fruitive activity, and the rest is something else. The whole program is fruitive activity. The whole program is fruitive activity. It's the psychology of I'm doing something in order to bring happiness or to avoid distress. And I may not know the formula that pious activities brings happiness, so I do pious activities. That's the atheist or agnostic, whichever your preference is. And then the theist, I do pious activities because I want prosperity. That's fruitive activity. That's the good kind. And then the happiness that comes from it, Prabhupada explains, it's depleting that stockpile of pious activities, and the suffering is depleting the stockpile of impious activities. So one needs to go beyond that. And to go beyond it is, start with tolerate, accept it as God's arrangement. But the higher is, there's some service unto the personality of Godhead in this circumstance. How to best serve Him? What's His pleasure? How can I give pleasure to Krishna in this circumstance? How can I best do that? Even thinking like that, Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita purport, that even planning in this way how to advance the cause of Krishna consciousness, even if one doesn't do all those things, it counts. It's devotional service. It frees one from the other thing, I don't like the circumstance, or I like the circumstance, let me try to enjoy it. To take one out of that fruitive activity paradigm and into the realm of devotional service. And then we go down the realm of devotional service and things happen. You know, we can give a list of things that happen that we don't like. You're the pujari and somebody put the bell somewhere, you don't know where it is, and you got to make the offering. Nobody here would do that though. Or you're the cook and somebody, whatever, somebody didn't wash the pot, or the vegetable that you had cut, it's gone. What happened? Something. And so many somethings that are the causes. So, it's not that, oh, that's nice, the bell is gone.
Yeah.
Krishna's arrangement. And so on. Oh, the pot washer didn't wash the pots. Krishna's mercy. And the offering's going to be late. Krishna just must not have wanted to eat at that time. He must have wanted to eat later. Krishna's mercy. Not like that. But it's not, you know, become angry and frustrated and go and yell and scream at somebody. There is devotional service to be done. We're dealing with a place that has modes of nature. They are acting, called the material world. And how do I best serve Krishna in this circumstance? Tie a bell to my dhoti, and so I don't have to worry about that. Then you can have a big knot in your dhoti with all the things you have to do in the course of the day. So that's not the solution. And you know, you find what Krishna will give the intelligence how to have proper arrangements so that you know the modes of nature are acting less and the realm of devotional service becomes predominant by awakening our attention that goes to Krishna throughout the day. One of the best ways for that to happen is our morning program. So the devotees taking part as far as possible in the morning program and staying very focused while chanting and do all those things that help us achieve Krishna at the center and promoting that and helping one another. That's the solution. Hearing attentively the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and getting to the bottom of these messages and then, oh yeah, by the way, applying it. Because theoretical understanding is necessary and application is additionally necessary. So, Narada's advice to Dhruva is crossing over the darkness of nescience very easily can be accomplished by accepting circumstances of life as sent by God and being happy. One should try to keep himself satisfied in any condition. Provided we can render service to Krishna, we can be happy in any condition. There's so many opportunities for devotional service. It's not reduced by Kali Yuga, it's amplified. So many opportunities for devotional service. And they're challenging. Krishna's giving us lots of opportunity for serving Him. If one can get out of the conclusion of the purport, if one can get out of the clutches of material existence by doing that. So what Narada wants to give Dhruva is something far more than a kingdom. What Dhruva wants is a kingdom. He's very fixed. I want a kingdom. And nothing is going to sway me from that kingdom. The misfortune is his desire for the kingdom is inspired by something material, which is going to... It's non-renewable energy. It's going to become exhausted after some time. And then what? So he wants to put a transcendental objective from the beginning, crossing over the ocean of material existence. And it connects, because that's how you're going to find Vishnu if you don't have that. So give up this material motivation. As he goes on, we're going to hear Dhruva accepts that your advice is very good, and there's one problem. I can't accept it. Because I have this get back spirit, I can't accept it. Thus, if we simply surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we shall get out of the clutches of material existence, leaving aside this pious and impious, enjoying and suffering program. We tolerate passing through that atmosphere into the transcendental atmosphere to be with Krishna, serving Him. Any comments or questions? Yes?
I have a couple of questions. Actually, one question asked to you is that we don't think we release a conclusion on it. I'd like to ask that second if we have time. The first question is thinking about this quality of tolerance that you're talking about. I was just thinking on a personal level, maybe it seems so deep and it's so deep and there's so much room to go to get there. But at the same time, I was thinking on an institutional level, is there a concept of that's too tolerant or that's too liberal?
Yeah, sure. It goes on all the time. On an institutional level, it goes on all the time.
And how are we to deal with it?
Institutionally or personally?
Personally as part of the institution.
Well, personally we have... Brajavihari has given a whole seminar on this. He calls it Pizza and Decorus. The liberal and the conservative. The conservative says we can only offer to Krishna Pakoras because he's, you know, Krishna's used to pakoras. And another person says, no, the ingredients in pizza is the same. It's all, you know, it's offerable. Let's offer pizza to Krishna. And the conservative says, pizza to Krishna. Whoever heard of Krishna eating pizza? You ever read that anywhere in the Bhagavatam that they serve Krishna pizza? And then there's the moderates. It's like the world around us. So, individually, we are going to be, you know, somewhere in that spectrum. So we're going to regard circumstances of life or circumstances within the institution according to our perspective. But our institution has persons that are from that all ends of the spectrum. And Krishna accepts every one of them. Provided there's... So, you know, there is a line to draw, something that's too far. We're dealing with a circumstance, without naming names, we're dealing with a circumstance where one of our DBC godbrothers says, using an American metaphor that those of you from India probably won't understand. It's a football example. There's a rule in football that if you catch, you can run along the sideline and the passer passes the ball, and you, as long as your feet are inside that line, it's good. You can be right at the edge. If your feet are touching inside that line, it's good. It qualifies. So there are some persons, without naming names, they push things right to the edge. But they can justify, you know, I didn't break the principles. I'm inside the line. And I caught the ball. I didn't drop the ball. So it's good. And there are others that say, you're so close to the edge and you're the senior person. Okay, you didn't do that and you didn't do that, but what you're doing is, it's not appropriate. Say, no, tell me what I did wrong. I did all right. My feet were inside the line and I caught the ball. I didn't drop it. So the liberals are going, yay, and the conservatives are going, boo. And the moderates are trying to deal with this person to help him, you know, like, just stay more to the middle of the field. And part of it is, you know, being socially responsible. So it gets into this... I'll give another example. We had I remember very clearly, just Krishna's arrangement, that over here were the liberals seated in a meeting. It was in New Vrindavan, and over here were the liberals, and over here were the conservatives. And the voices were going like that. And the dynamic was so clear. It was on some issue. The moderator was up front just calling on people, and it was like a tennis match going back and forth across the net. And there are differences of view in that, and that's going to happen. Here's an example from our acharyas. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very conservative. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very liberal. Liberal doesn't mean he crossed over the line, but how he wanted to push forward Krishna consciousness was he invited into his home persons who really needed association. They really needed a cleanup job. And he sat with them and very patiently, by humble persuasion, elevated them. And his son, you know, challenging him, you know, smashing and confronting and very different approach. He didn't disrespect his father or his approach, but he had a very different approach. And they're transcendentalists. It's not material contamination, therefore this or therefore that. They're transcendentalists. Unquestionable transcendentalists. And there's room for both ends of the spectrum in the transcendental realm. and, you know, go higher, and, you know, Chandravali and Radharani, the right wing and the left wing gopis, exist in the spiritual world. So now, how do we as an individual deal with that? Well, you can become a right wing or a left wing gopi. Or you can become a Bhaktivinoda Thakur type or a Bhaktisiddhanta type. And then we have an institution that we have certain norms that we have to live within. You know, it's called respect. Bhaktisiddhanta's view towards his father was respect, although his approach was totally different. He would walk down the street and people would run the other direction. Here comes the Sringa Guru, let's hide. We can't imitate, but that was how Krishna inspired him from within his heart. And unless one has genuinely has purity, neither is going to work. I'll share something. I went to a program at a person's home somewhere, and previous to me, a sannyasi had gone to that same someone's home. He saw a picture on the altar with Krishna of somebody else besides Krishna, and he snatched the picture and sat down and proceeded, without even having kirtan, just proceeded to blast that person whose picture was on the altar. The wife went running out of the home, and the sannyasi didn't pay any attention to the turmoil that he was creating, and he took the picture with him. The parents went the next day to that place where that sannyasi was staying, looked in the garbage to see if they could find the picture of that person who they had his picture on the altar. And they cried to the temple president, who went to the sannyasi, said, you know, what have you done? And give me the picture so I can give it back to them. So a year passed before he would let devotees come in his home again. I was the next sannyasi to go to his home. And there was the picture on the altar. I didn't say anything. And I wouldn't have said anything, you know, if I hadn't known that history. And then at the end, he sat right in front of me and asked, how should one, you know, it has some prior affinity, but now has come to the stage of appreciating Krishna and Krishna bhakti, what should they do with that feeling they have for that other personality? And the answer that I gave him, he was radiating. He was very happy. The man is chanting 16 rounds, does tons of service at the temple. He's a nice man. So, you know, peace and purpose. And you judge a thing by its result. And without purity, nothing is going to work. So the first business of what we do individually is look to purity, and institutionally, same thing, collectively or individually. And respect. If there is something that needs to be addressed, let it be addressed from the position of purity, not from the position of I'm right and you're wrong. Let's get one thing straight. I'm right and you're wrong. Are you ready for a conversation now? And there are things that have standards that aren't just, okay, it's liberal or it's conservative, but it's in the ballpark. There are things that go back to this other example. We're addressing this particular senior devotee that stays right on the edge all the time. And almost like, you know, defiance. To make a point. Anyway. So, we want to be respectful. We also want to be responsible. We also want people to, in the best possible way, go beyond material existence. And as elder persons, we need to lead by example how to do that. So then, you know, in the right way, gentle tap on the shoulder or a private discussion or something that helps people bring people more to the middle of the road. Just out of respect for the population of devotees, the social sensibilities. Still under the banner of the teachings of our acharyas, particularly of our founder acharya, I left time deliberately. It was a short class. Go ahead.
A couple of days back, this person was talking about the quality of determination.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see tolerance as a determination in itself. And I thought in that few more context, I can ask this question again.
Okay.
If a person is in a situation where a spiritual authority may have not allowed or dropped the trust of the subordinate repeatedly, maybe once, or maybe repeatedly, on the subordinate side, what is the determination supposed to look like?
I don't think the determination changes because of circumstance. It's the determination for what? The determination for pleasing Krishna doesn't change by circumstance.
How do we keep the relationship out of the process?
Because ultimately it's like that, I was supposed to send this to somebody. No, I did send it to somebody. That the Mother Teresa is saying, in the final issue, it's not about them and us, it's about us and God. We have a relationship with Krishna, and a relationship with others is with Krishna at the center. So the relationship is with you and Krishna. What will make Krishna pleased? And that's your determination. That forms and fuels your determination. What will make Krishna pleased? And that's that. The other person or persons, plural, because there, you know, there could be lots of persons that I'm not so sure I want to invest trust in. Then, you know, your determination is in terms of pleasing Krishna, and you deal respectfully, because relationships have as their fabric respect, so you deal respectfully so that you can please Krishna. And if something needs to be done, you know, you go to the right places for something to be done. Provided they're within that, you know, they're still on the playing field, they're still within the realm of devotional service, you respect, here's an individual that has attraction for Krishna. And I can think of a number of people that I see in them an attraction for Krishna. And I respect that. Now, there may be stuff that person needs to work on, And based upon the stuff the person needs to work on, I may choose to deal with them in this way or that way, or but I'm not going to let go of the respect that I have for that attraction that they have for Krishna. That's fundamental. I'm thinking of a particular individual right now. My mind is stuck on that. Yesterday I received a call from Chandrasekhar Swami. He went to the Rath Yatra in Harrisburg and then to Washington, D.C. And in Harrisburg, he saw our dear friend Sachit Ananda. Because coming up very soon is the trial for the Long Island legal case. And Sachit flew to New York to testify in court against the GVC some time ago because he had an issue with Vishwambar, who was doing some service for the GVC. So he testified against Vishwambar, but it was against the GVC. So, you know, that's brought his name. His name or his thought of him to this dialogue. He has an attraction for Krishna. He's got a whole bunch of problems, but he has some attraction for Krishna. Now, how to best address the person? And your question was different, but as far as trust, I don't trust him. But he has an attraction for Krishna. So now, how to deal with that person? It's very difficult, and he can be really, 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 really difficult. And it doesn't take much to get him to be really, 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 really difficult. He can be really difficult. But fundamentally, he has an attraction for Krishna. Not quite like Dhruva's attraction for Krishna, but it's something like Dhruva's attraction for Krishna. He has an attraction for Krishna. So that respect can be there. And then one can deal with him, even if it's in a disciplinary way, you know, for his well-being, to help him preserve and protect his attraction for Krishna. And not destroy it by offending and so on and so on. And that's how we should regard that person. Or it's a person who, you know, we realize we can't really trust, but we don't lose track of the. But otherwise, we get sucked into the material energy by default. So your choice of how you behave towards another person who you've lost trust in should not be, and your own determination in devotional service, the determination goes to Krishna and to that other person, assuming that there's a core attraction for Krishna there, respect starts there, and then you depend upon the intelligence Krishna gives you and the advice of those guiding you, how to best deal with that person, how to be best of service, specifically. And then you can be very determined in serving to please Krishna. You know, the principle is easy to utter, it's a whole other thing to live it, but that's the principle. Something else? Anyone else? Yes?
What I did, just talk about the determination to get rid of the versus tolerating those attentions while we're in prison?
Tolerating on one level, and what's the other level?
The determination to get rid of them, but then they're still there.
Oh, attachments.
Attachments.
Well, it's this balance. It's as your spiritual life, as your internal spiritual life grows, you can get rid of them. But which comes first? Getting rid of them or developing your internal spiritual life? Developing your internal spiritual life. Prajnakriya comes before anatta-nirvritti. And on the strength of awakening of Krishna, they happen simultaneously, but where your attention should go is awakening your devotional life. And on the strength of that, gradually and according to capacity, freeing oneself from unwanted things. Right? Anything else? Usually have something. Or a couple of somethings.
I did have a question about... I think there's so much you can answer this question.
Okay. It's covered. Okay. Jitendriya? Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.